Welcome to The Common Sense Show with your host, Dave Hodges. We discuss a variety of topics here, including the deep state, the new world order, Agenda 21. There is no one, no topic beyond Dave's reach, because as you know, you can't dodge the Hodge.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Hodges. I'm the host of The Common Sense Show, and we are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. We have a terrific segment for you here. You're really going to enjoy this. We've got Brian Toohey, and he's a man after my own heart because I don't trust a lot of things about professional sports. I think it can be as crooked as the halls of Congress, and we're going to get into this. Now, you might hear it in my voice. I'm a little under the weather, but as they say, the show must go on. But before we join Brian, I need to let you know who's bringing this show to you, making it possible. Our good friends at PrepareWithDave.com, best storable food in the world, 70% off. And I'll tell you, don't wait for the hurricane. Don't wait for the natural disaster. Don't wait for the civil unrest. You need to have at least 6 months. And that's what FEMA tells us now, too. And the average person has 3 days. You got to do better than that. 70% off, folks. Restaurant quality. Go to PrepareWithDave.com. We're also brought to you by Noble Gold. Listen to me. What is it you read in the Wall Street Journal? All pensions are going to be underwater by 2030. Well, if you're in the late 40s, 50, you can't start over. You got to protect what you got, and we have the people that can convert for you. They'll consult with you free of charge, no pressure, but it's gold-backed. And see, gold holds its value, cash doesn't. Give the good people at Noble Gold a call, 877-646-5347. Brian Toohey has been a guest before, and we have kicked this subject around before. And as you all know, I'm an ex-college basketball coach, played college basketball. And I love sports, but I hate corruption worse than I like sports. And we asked Brian to come on in lieu of the recent Super Bowl, which I thought was the most boring Super Bowl I've ever seen. And we're going to talk about corruption in sports. Hi, Brian. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me on, Dave.
Well, let's just start with the most recent major event. Any hanky-panky with the Super Bowl?
You know, nothing that really stood out. I mean, there's always, you know, a couple of questionable refereeing calls that people can argue about that should have been made, that shouldn't have been made. But I agree with you. It was, like, one of the most boring football games I've seen in a long time. And it's really interesting because, you know, for quite some time now, and I don't even know, probably going back 10, 15 years at least, the Super Bowls have all been pretty darn entertaining. You know, they've been all pretty close. They've all been within, I think, a score. And this one pretty much was within the score until the final seconds. But in terms of entertainment, which is what the NFL is, it's an entertainment business, an entertainment industry, it didn't really, I think, provide the bang for the buck on Sunday.
When we look at corruption, and let's just, you know, stay with the NFL for a moment, have you seen major games being thrown and you just go, this just can't be true? This has got to be rigged and it affected a major football contest?
With the NFL, I would say yes. But see, what I see is being rigged is I don't see it being rigged necessarily by gamblers or organized crime doing it for betting purposes, although I believe that happens as well. I think what it does, and it's something that, you know, everybody should be aware of if they're a fan of professional sports, is I think the leagues, like the NFL, will manipulate and outright fix their own games and do so in order to promote certain storylines and to get particular outcomes that suits their needs. And the scary thing is, and the thing that I always ask people to take away, you know, from interviews like this, if they're going to take anything away from it, is that it is not against the law. There is no law that prevents a league like the NFL from fixing its own game. Nothing stops.
Really? You're kidding. That's perfectly legal to fix your own game?
Yes. Because, for one, it's entertainment. So it's like, you know, if you watch the match and you don't like, you know, who gets the final rose, you know, you can't sue the producers because you didn't like the way it turned out. And it's the same with a movie. You know, if you go see a movie and you didn't like the ending, you didn't like the fact that the bad guy won, you can't sue the movie studio over the ending of a film And it's the same with the NFL. You know, they tried it with the, just recently with the Saints-Rams game, where there was, it should have been a clear pass interference penalty, or at least a helmet-to-helmet hit penalty, which would have awarded the Saints a first down, basically
yes.
gave them the game, and they didn't make the call. Well, you know, somebody tried to sue the NFL, but guess what? It's not going anywhere. It's been thrown out already because you can't sue over an outcome, even if it's a fraudulent outcome. Because it is entertainment. There's no law that actually protects fans from the league manipulating their own game. And they can do so because, basically, if they do it through your officials, they're employees of the league. So if the league tells the officials, hey, we want to keep the game close into the fourth quarter, or hey, we want to make sure Team X wins, make sure you watch, you know, certain penalties on this team, but, you know, give this other team leeway, they can do that and do that perfectly legally. There's no crime being committed.
That is stunning to me. That's, to me, that's like a congressman taking a bribe for a vote.
Well, see, now, see, there is a law called the Sports Bribery Act, which is passed, I think it was 1961. And that says you cannot bribe an official or a player or a coach to alter the outcome of a game. But if you're employed by the NFL and the NFL says, hey, we want you to do your job in this way, it's not a bribe. It's just an employee, you know, doing what an employer asks. That's not a bribe. That's just the way business is done. And so, you know, there was the former NBA referee, Tim Donaghy, who was basically arrested by the FBI on gambling charges and allegedly fixed games, although he never claimed to actually fix a game. But he wrote a book after the whole incident, and he said the NBA would direct us basically when to call fouls, when not to call fouls, and we as officials knew, you know, that they wanted playoff series to go to six or seven games rather than four or five. And so we made calls accordingly because even though the NBA didn't, you know, overtly direct us to make sure certain outcomes happened, they hinted very strongly at what they wanted. And as officials, they did what was asked of them.
Yeah, the Donaghy case is really interesting to me. Let's talk about how he said he got instructed. He said it wasn't overt. So
correct.
What would that look or sound like?
Well, the way he kind of explained it, and it's been a while since I read his book, but he would basically say the league would send them, and they did with every officiating crew with all the games, they would send them basically like instructional tapes. They would basically say, okay, look, officials, we want you to be on the lookout for this. And on the videotape, it would show certain plays and say, look, all of these plays should have been called as fouls. And they basically, the way Donaghy explained it was, if a certain team like had a prominent center like Shaquille O'Neal back in the day or Tim Duncan, and there was a certain thing that these guys always did that technically should have been a foul but most of the time was never ever called, the league was basically saying, we want you to call fouls against that player for making that play. And you do it enough, it stops the behavior and it alters the way the team performs and they alter the way that star performs, and therefore you kind of manipulate the game to go a certain direction.
Of all the sports, which one do you think is the easiest to manipulate?
Manipulate from a, like, entertainment perspective or from a gambling perspective?
Is there a difference?
Well, to a degree. I mean, I think, you know, for officiating to manipulate a game, it's either the NBA. It's probably more to the NBA than anything, but the NBA or the NFL, obviously the officials have the biggest influence because, you know, in the NBA, the difference between, or in basketball, basically, the difference between a blocking foul and a charging foul is really, you know, subjective. It's very subjective. You can call it either way most of the time. So it's a question of, do you lean on the defense or do you lean on the offense to push a game one way or the other? And in the NFL, I think anybody who's watched the game knows that most of the major penalties, pass interference, holding, those sorts of things, are very subjective as well. Because, you know, they claim holding can be called on every play, but it's not. It's called once in a blue moon. Well, when is it called? Why is it called at that particular time? And what was going on in that play? So, I mean, you can negate a touchdown with an offensive holding call, which you can call almost any time. You can help an offensive team out with a pass interference call, which can be called almost on any passing play. So, I mean, it's just a matter of when you do it. So I think, you know, if you're going to do it for entertainment reasons and you control the officials like the leagues control their own officials, those are the two easiest sports to manipulate for entertainment reasons. I think for betting reasons, most sports, if you can get, you know, an athlete, I mean, especially individual sports, tennis, boxing, those sort of things, you can fix them all day long. But team sports, you know, I think, again, if you go with the NBA, if you control one player, college basketball, you control one player, you control 20% of the team, you can control an outcome pretty easily.
Yeah, well, that would be for betting. I see what you're saying there with the difference. The Donaghy thing I've really looked at, and I'll tell you, being a basketball guy, the NBA is rigged. And I've just seen so much. Let me give you an example.
Sure.
I forget the year, but it was Amari Stoudemire, Steve Nash, Boris Diaw. That was the core of the Suns. And they were playing Duncan and Ginobili of the Spurs. And they were going to clearly win this series. They're winning in San Antonio. And Steve Nash gets body checked into the scorer's table. Two of his teammates don't even start trouble. They just come to his assistance, but they left the bench area. Now, I should mention, in the first half, Spurs star center Tim Duncan left the bench in an altercation and went all the way to the free throw line in front of his bench. And what ended up happening is the Suns got two players suspended, even though the flagrant act was against Steve Nash, the Suns' point guard. And San Antonio goes on to win the series because the Suns are shorthanded. I knew right then, I knew that game, that outcome was rigged, and the Spurs were supposed to win. There's no question in my mind.
Yeah, and exactly. And them doing something like that, again, what law was broken by them doing that? Nothing. You know, what sort of recourse did fans have besides not showing up or not watching?
There you go.
Nothing. So, I mean, you know, the things like that just literally prove my point, is you can see that. And there's other examples in the NBA. There's a lot of examples in the NBA that, you know, where that has happened. I mean, even there was a Bucks 76ers series probably early 2000s where the same thing. They suspended one of the key Bucks players for Game 7 because they wanted the 76ers in the finals and not the Milwaukee Bucks. And that's exactly what they got. I mean, you could go to the 2002 Western Conference Finals, which was totally rigged for the Lakers with Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal rather than having the Sacramento Kings, which clearly should have,
were
basically robbed out of Game 6.
And Steve Nash was on that team, too.
So, I mean, this is blatant. And what, you know, bothers me even almost more than that, because the in-game manipulation usually is more subtle than those sorts of things. But what really bothers me with the NBA is the game tanking, which occurs, which I don't think, you know, maybe your listeners don't know about. But, you know, in basketball and in football and even hockey, you know, a high draft pick, you know, a LeBron James type of draft pick can alter a franchise's future, like, you know, snap of the fingers. And what happens now is teams, when they can't make the playoffs or maybe just might slip into the playoffs, the theory now is, and it's promoted, you know, by sports writers and by a lot of people, the theory and the plan now is to just lose games, to intentionally lose games.
Yes.
So you have a better chance at getting that number one draft pick and get that franchising changing player. And owners have admitted it. I mean, Mark Cuban, who people might know from the Shark Tank, and, you know, he's the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, he's admitted 2 years in a row that he basically told his team to lose. And yet fans still show up to watch the games be played. I mean, he's literally telling his team to throw games, and nobody seems to care. In fact, people applaud it because they think it's a good strategic move. So if you can get your players to lose, you know, quote, you know, unimportant games, well, then you could probably get them to tank in important games, right? I mean, if you can do the trick here, why can't you do the trick there? I mean, that's what frightens me. And like I say, that it's applauded is an even bigger question mark in my mind.
Well, the Suns, because they've now become a perennial loser under their horrendous owner, Robert Sarver, they're tanking every year. And they keep getting the first to the fourth draft pick, and they always come back, and they're just as bad or worse the next year. And speaking of the lottery, what do you think about that? Do you think the lottery is rigged?
I mean, like state lottery?
No, the lottery with the NBA draft.
Oh, the draft lottery? Oh, I'm sure it has been. I mean, I don't think every year it is, but I think it goes back to the very first draft lottery when Patrick Ewing was the prize.
Yes.
That I am certain that was rigged to make sure he wound up on the New York Knicks. I mean, I think without a doubt that was rigged. And I think it still continues to be rigged, or at least massaged, to help certain teams out at certain points in time.
Interesting. Well, it seems like when I've watched the lottery, when they have the lottery that defies the odds, because they always place the odds at who gets the number one pick, you might have 3-1, 1,000-2, whatever the odds are. The odds get violated in the interest of a human interest story. Have you ever noticed that?
Well, yeah, that's been the hip thing now with the NBA is instead of just having, you know, a regular, like the general manager representative be there for the team, they, like you say, they have these human interest story people representing the team, and it's like whoever's almost like the saddest case there winds up getting the number one draft pick. It's kind of, again, because it's broadcast for entertainment purposes, it's like they have to create this story to make sure this team gets the number one pick. I mean, they could do it, you know, behind closed door in the commissioner's office, and the results technically should be the same, but they've turned it into this, you know, big to-do, this big broadcast event, and now all of a sudden, like you say, the story starts changing. It's all about building this, you know, myth behind, you know, who gets drafted where and when.
Let me ask you this. Why do you think the general public is not more aware of this?
I think it's a combination of, in many senses, I think most sports fans are, I hate to use the word brainwashed, but I think you're almost brainwashed as a child, because if you participate in, you know, Little League football or, you know, Little League baseball or what have you, you're taught, you know, to always give your best and, you know, to perform as hard as you can and to train and work hard. And so if you're watching sports on one hand and you're participating in sports on the other, you get that kind of poured into your head that, you know, you always do your best and the best team wins, the best man wins. It's always about, you know, practicing and perfecting and et cetera, et cetera. And so you get brainwashed into believing that if you made it to that level, that's how you would perform, that's how you would behave. Yet, you know, you look around these leagues and you see outright criminals being allowed to play in the sports, and guys who, you know, like Allen Iverson famously said, you know, practice. Well, it's just practice. Who cares? You know? I mean, so I think what happens is too many people believe in the fairy tale, and not enough people look at it critically and understand this is a monster business, and there's other monster businesses like Nike and Under Armour and other companies that built their reputations on the back of these other businesses, and the television networks are involved, so there's massive media conglomerates that are literally funding the NFL and Major League Baseball and these other sports, and so there's just so much money wrapped up into it. I just question, you know, why more people don't look at it that way and say, you know, is this really coincidence how the way these things pan out, or is there an agenda behind it and money behind it, and therefore whatever that money wants to happen or what they think will generate more money for these businesses, maybe that's what's going to happen. And I think that's the case more often than not.
Is organized crime involved?
I don't believe so. I could be wrong. I mean, I know they were involved obviously illegal, you know, bookmaking in terms of the gambling end of things, even though it's starting to change in the United States now. But it, you know, illegal gambling was one of, if not the number one moneymaker for organized crime for probably the last 50 years. So I know they're involved on that end. They're actually involved in the teams and the sports. That I don't know. But there are definitely some owners that have some shady backgrounds. I mean, look at the Haslam owner of the Browns. I mean, he was under criminal indictment. The guy who owns the Vikings, he was looked at for criminality. I mean, so there's some questionable owners out there, that's for sure. Whether they're tied to organized crime, I can't exactly say. But the early owners of the NFL were definitely bookmakers.
How so?
Well, I know, like, Tim Mara, whose family still owns the New York Giants, he literally was a bookmaker. That's how he made his money.
Really?
And he paid $500 to buy the Giants franchise back in whatever it was, 1920. But he was legitimately a bookmaker at a time when bookmaking wasn't illegal, but that's what he did. And one of his best friends, who happened to be a huge gambler, was Art Rooney, whose family still owns the Pittsburgh Steelers. And that's how Rooney got involved in the NFL at the early stages. So, I mean, there actually is, and even if you look at the NHL, which a lot of people don't know, the guys who originally owned some of the original stadiums and teams, like Norris and Wirtz, they were tied to organized crime through boxing and had some shady backgrounds.
Then tell me, how does Major League Baseball keep Pete Rose out of the Hall of Fame?
Well, I actually think that's the one good thing they're doing. To be honest, I think he should be out of the Hall of Fame if they're going to stay, you know, tried and true to that rule of, you know, the one thing you can't do is gamble upon baseball. because I know there's no doubt in my mind that he gambled upon baseball. And I know that by gambling on baseball, he was actually altering the outcome of games because of his gambling. So I think actually baseball is correct in keeping him out of the Hall of Fame. The problem is there's a lot of other players that should be out of the Hall of Fame, and some of the players should be kicked out of the Hall of Fame. I mean, but the book I wrote called Larceny Games, I obtained over 400 files through the Freedom of Information Act through the FBI that detailed investigations into gambling on professional sports, and it revealed that there's a handful of NFL and NBA players who the FBI knew gambled upon their own sport, and that the leagues probably knew that they were gambling upon their own sport and probably fixing games or shaving points, and yet these guys are still Hall of Famers.
Who were they?
Well, some of the ones that I revealed, Len Dawson for the Chiefs, quarterback of the Chiefs, he was known to be gambling on games. What's his name? George Blanda, who was the old man of the game, who played for the
Bears. You're talking two of the top quarterbacks in AFL history.
Yeah,
and later
both were
NFL.
Known to be gambling.
Yeah.
Both were known to be gambling on NFL games. In the NBA, Wilt Chamberlain was a heavy gambler,
Really?
And so was Bill Russell.
That's shocking.
Well, and that's not me. And the thing is, it's not me making this up. It's straight out of these FBI files. You know, I mean, the investigations they did. And basically, with Russell and Wilt Chamberlain, the FBI file, and I'm paraphrasing, but it basically says, we know they're gambling on games. The thing is even if they're fixing the outcome of these games, they're not being bribed to do so. So like I said, the Sports Bribery Act, which says, you know, a third party pays a player to alter the outcome of a game. They're basically altering the outcome of the games on the bets they make themselves. So therefore, no crime is being committed, and we, the FBI, then don't care and have nothing to investigate. We're not the NBA's police. They should be doing this themselves, and they dropped the case entirely.
Why do you? Let me ask you this question in response to your own work. Are you in a minority of one in going after this, or are there other researchers that are doing the same thing? And if so, then why don't we hear more about it?
I am myself. I'm the only one doing this. Now, there was a guy by the name of Dan Moldea who, around 1989, I think, he published a book called Interference, and I think the subtitle is something like How Organized Crime Influences Professional Football. But Moldea did an investigation because the NFL claims they've never in their 100-year history now never had a game fixed by gamblers or some sort of outside influence. Okay, they've claimed it's never happened. But Moldea and his research, he uncovered over 70 NFL games that were likely fixed, if not more. And when he released his book, the NFL literally paid the guy to negatively review the book and call his work shoddy, so it would disgrace the book, and therefore nobody would go buy the book. And Moldea, to this day, he's still active and out there, claims the NFL literally ruined his career because he wrote that book. And so after that, nobody bothered doing this until I did. And so when I did this, I actually got in contact with Moldea, and he told me, he goes, don't write this book, and this is the book that became Larceny Games. He goes, because they'll ruin your career. And I said, well, that's no problem, because I really don't have a career to ruin, so I'm going to do it anyway. So I did. But I did find out that even though I uncovered things that nobody had seen before, that came straight out of FBI files, that, you know, was based on all this great information the FBI had coming from informants within organized crime and the underworld of, you know, bookmaking, that nobody cared. Nobody cared that I revealed all this information. Nobody picked up on it. Nobody ran with it. Nobody else published it. Nobody reviewed the book. It was just like it never happened. So they kind of censored the fact that this book existed by just ignoring it completely.
So ESPN's not calling and saying, hey, will you come on our morning show, please? And we want you on in our morning show?
Here's the amazing thing, is when the book was going to be released, the publisher, my publisher's name, Farrell House, they were contacted by ESPN, Yahoo Sports, HBO Sports. I talked with a producer from 60 Minutes. There were some heavy hitters who asked for copies and received copies of the book, and not a single one did anything with it.
That's because...
And the thing was, is that one of the stories in Larceny Games was about members of the New York Knicks in the early 1980s shaving points as a favor to their cocaine dealer. Okay, and the FBI saw that this cocaine dealer went from betting $500 a night on Knicks games to betting over $10,000 a night and won like 8 of 9 games.
Oh my.
And, but the FBI, again, dropped it for whatever reason. So the New York Post actually found that in my book and did a back page cover story about it and confirmed everything that I had found in the FBI files. So, I mean, anybody could have gone out and confirmed anything in the book because I just drew it straight out of the files. I didn't make anything up. I didn't put words into anybody's mouth. I didn't create conspiracy theories. I just wrote, look, here's what the FBI knew, and I could decipher from what was redacted who these players were because they would include, like, statistics from games. So, like, you know, it was a 1968 game played on Sunday, October 12th. Well, who else was the Kansas City quarterback that day? Len Dawson. So they're writing about Len Dawson. I mean, so you can figure this stuff out. But the New York Post confirmed what I had found about the Knicks and the cocaine dealer and all that and published it. And the story went viral everywhere except ESPN, which is the broadcast partner of the NBA. So they kept it onto their website, off their page and everything because they didn't want to know about it.
Do you realize how comical this sounds? I mean, we're talking, you lay down big money to go see a pro sporting event, and that pro sporting event is tainted. And sometimes you're saying the outcome is predetermined.
Oh, sure. I mean, it shouldn't shock people. I mean, just think, even just if you want to go to manipulation to just the simpler levels, just think about performance-enhancing drugs. I mean, a guy who won the MVP of the Super Bowl, Julian Edelman, he was suspended for the first 4 games of this season for performance-enhancing drugs. And yet they named him the MVP of the Super Bowl. Where's your integrity, NFL? Should the guy be suspended for 4 games, or should he have been kicked out of the league? Should he not even been out there? Because he never admitted what, or never told the public what he was using. But clearly it was something enough to get the guy kicked out for 4 games. So, I mean, you know, you look at performance-enhancing drugs. I mean, do you think all these guys, you know, you think guys can play football into their 40s because they're clean and just eating healthy and doing their exercises? Or are they taking something? You know, so, I mean, there's so many games that are really even being manipulated just by that alone without some sort of outside influence. That, like I say, I don't think any sporting event anybody watches is clean on any level. I think there's so much going on in these games, it'll blow people's minds.
Does the NBA, in your opinion, or the NFL, do they actually have a hit team that says, okay, marketing says it's best if this team wins because it's a big city market. They'll draw more viewers, so we have to manipulate this game. Are there actually people who are assigned these duties? What has your investigation revealed?
Well, you know, back in the 1980s, 1990s, the NBA used to meet with, I think it was NBC at the time that covered their games, every week and discuss what was the big stories, what was what. So, I mean, I'm sure when you have the, you know, the head of NBC Sports meeting with the, you know, David Stern, the commissioner of the NBA, you don't think they were both sitting there going, you know, Michael Jordan is huge. He's Nike, he's McDonald's, he's everything. We need him to keep going. See, he's what we got to promote. He's what we got to, you know, make sure gets to the finals.
Right.
And, I mean, every week you listen, if people listen and pay attention when they're talking on NFL games, they'll talk about how the announcers sat in the production meetings with the coaches and players, certain players. And so, I mean, you know, these storylines are being crafted just through the television and through regular reporting. But I think on another level, if you want to get more conspiratorial about it, you know, the NFL has basically their own private police force known as NFL Security. And these guys are former CIA agents, former FBI agents, former local law enforcement guys. And their job is basically to keep negative things out of the press.
Do you check under the hood of your car before you start in the morning?
No, I probably should, but I don't. But they literally do. They have their own private security force. And I interviewed a former head of NFL Security, Warren Welsh. And he used to be an FBI agent, and then he joined the NFL, and he was the head of the security department. And I literally interviewed the guy for an hour the first time I talked to him. And at the end of the hour, I still had no idea what NFL Security did. That's how vague he was able to talk about what they did.
Have you ever been paid a visit by the Goon Squad?
No, not yet. I think basically they think because I'm not affiliated with, you know, some major sports outlet. I'm not NBC Sports. I'm not ESPN. I'm not whatever. As long as, you know, people don't really talk about me, as long as people don't really, you know, publish or publicize my work and what I found, then who cares? You know, if they can, if the worst thing they could do really is draw attention to me by coming after me. And, you know, the NBA learned that lesson a while ago. There actually was a study done by a couple of, I think it was college professors, who found that NBA officials were basically calling more fouls on black players than white players. And the NBA freaked out. They said, oh, this can't be true. So they did their own study, and the study actually found that it was even worse bias against black players than it was white players. And after they, you know, discovered that and that became common knowledge, they basically learned, okay, anything bad that happens, you know, anything like that that comes out, don't pay any attention to it, just ignore it, push it aside, and just focus on what you're doing, because the more we draw attention to these things, like what I research, the more publicity it gets, the more people know about it, and it's better to just let it blow past.
Wow. This just blows my mind. I mean, let's take it down to the NCAA basketball tournaments. That is a sporting event I'll watch. But I'll tell you where I'm suspicious. The lure and excitement of the NCAA basketball tournament, March Madness, to the average person has to do with the upsets. And there's one pairing that always seems to be the stunning upset. And that's the 5-12 matchup, the 5th-ranked team in a region against the 12th-ranked team. Have you found any collusion or any funny business along those lines?
Well, not to that specifically, no. I mean, like you said, there is some sort of weird statistic where that seems to happen more often than not, that a 12 beats a 5. But, you know, the NCAA, and I want to say, I think it's for the last 16, if not 20 years now, I forget where they're at. Every 4 years, they actually send out an anonymous survey to like 19,000 student athletes. And that covers basketball players, football players, you know, baseball players. I don't even know who it covers, but it definitely covers basketball and football players because they break down the stats later. And some of the questions they ask these athletes, have you ever gambled upon a sporting event? Which, if they answer yes, they should automatically be kicked out of the NCAA because it's against NCAA rules for them to gamble on about a sporting event. But literally like 20% of the respondents will answer yes to that question. And then they continue asking these questions, and it gets down to where they're asked, have you ever been approached to basically shave points or fix a game? And they even ask, have you ever fixed a game yourself? And they actually answer, they've had like 1% to 2% of the respondents in this survey answer yes to those questions. Which means if it's 1% of 20,000 student-athletes, that means like 200 games have been fixed.
And that's 1% that's willing to answer in the affirmative. There's probably a lot who don't
trust
anonymity of the survey, who will not even answer truthfully.
Yeah, and even if you say some are just, you know, laughingly saying, yeah, I fixed the game, you know, so let's say they, you know, 2% said that, and it's really only 1%. But again, you're talking 200 or more college basketball and football games that have been rigged on some level for gambling purposes.
And for my money, that'd be the 12-5 matchup. We're talking.
Well, and you know how many investigators the NCAA has for gambling violations in the United States?
How many?
One.
Well,
one.
Because it's not a problem. Hear no evil, see no evil.
Exactly.
Step aside for just a second. We're talking to Brian Toohey about corruption in sports, rigging sporting events, and boy, that's an anathema to me. Anyway, we're brought to you by, in this final segment, we're brought to you by Virtual Shield. Hey, look, all kinds of bad people want to get in your computer. They want to know your browsing history. And I'll tell you, if the wrong people get in charge in 2020, you might not be persecuted for where you go on the net. You might be prosecuted. So you need Virtual Shield because they stay one step ahead of the bad guys, and they keep them out of your computer. 35% off savings. It's absolutely fantastic. Go to hidewithdave.com. That's hidewithdave.com. And also, we're brought to you by Noble Gold. You heard me talk about this in the first segment. It's worth repeating, folks. Pensions are in trouble, and you really need to have yours assessed. And if you're cash-based, if you're bank-based, you need to really get out of it and get into precious metals backing, because that'll hold its value. Noble Gold can help you with that. Give them a call at 877-646-5347. Back with Brian Toohey. And Brian, I have to tell you, I grew up playing basketball and football primarily. I had a chance to go play both in college, played one, and I never had anything like this happen. No one ever approached me. My senior year in college, you know, we won, gosh, I think we were 22-8. And it was in the 32-team field. I'm dating myself. So we didn't make the NCAA, and our university wouldn't pay for us to go to the NIT. Long story short. But anyway, we were pretty good. And I was never approached. I always felt like the competition was honest. You know, sometimes you go on the road and you couldn't get a call. But I didn't feel there was anything nefarious. And I was a college basketball coach for 10 years. I had coached for 10 years, and I coached high school a lot of years. And I have to tell you, I never felt that there was anything weird going on with regard to fixing games. How far down does it go in college? Is it get outside the NCAA and get into just premier matchups, or do you find it in your Division II schools? I mean, what have you found?
Well, I mean, in terms of, like, direct evidence, like I say, I got a lot of things directly from the FBI and their investigations into it, and everything from the FBI was all Division I NCAA.
Mm-hmm.
And it included, though, it included not just players doing it, but also included a lot of referees shaving points and being involved, which is interesting because every scandal that's broken in NCAA history has always been revolved around players and never once about officials fixing games. But actually, I want to say, and I have this, my next book that's coming out is called The Fix is Still In, and I have a whole chapter about fixing college games, football and basketball games. And I want to say, I think almost half of the investigative files into NCAA basketball fixing involved officials doing it and not players. But also, at the same time, one of the things I have a chapter in that book as well is about Al McGuire, the famous Marquette college basketball coach.
Right.
And I'm fairly certain he was fixing games.
Really? Well, he was a rogue guy.
Yeah.
I knew Al McGuire. I was a high school basketball coach in Denver before I moved to the Phoenix area. And we used to host the medalist clinics. So all these high-profile coaches used to come in. And because it was at my high school, I used to go pick him up at the airport and take him to dinner. Huh? I got to know Al. That guy was rogue. I mean, he was a fun guy to be around. But, I mean, if, you know, you got the feeling he kind of played on the other side. What you're telling me doesn't surprise me. What made you think that Al McGuire was fixing games?
The FBI looked into it.
Oh, okay. That's pretty good.
Yeah. So, and I actually, it was interesting. I had written an article based off of that FBI file that got published. And not too long after, I actually had one of his former players call me and said, you know, all these years, he goes, you know, I played for Al McGuire. He was actually the first guy. I think he was the first guy McGuire recruited when he got to Marquette. And he goes, all these years I had these suspicions and bad feelings about Al McGuire. And when I read the article you put out, he said, I knew you were right. Because I knew you were right. And I actually include that in the book because I kind of rewrite the article and then add in what this former player had to say. But, I mean, one of the things that was known, and it was actually even published in, like, Sports Illustrated, was Al McGuire's brother was, and I don't think there's any other form of gambler besides degenerate gambler, but his brother was a degenerate gambler in New York City. He was known to be a crazy gambler and bet on anything and had a real gambling problem. And him and Al used to talk all the time about the games and about the spreads. You know, like I say, that was published in Sports Illustrated, but nobody went, like, a step further with it. They just let it go back in the 70s.
That was Dick McGuire, I believe, his brother. And if memory serves me right, he did a... Who was it?
I think that was his name, yeah.
Dick McGuire. And if I remember, memory serves me, he played in the NBA for a while, too.
No, there was one brother who played in the NBA. Al was a coach, and then there was a third brother. Might have been John. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, you're testing my memory now. the source from Marquette that you had that said he suspected Al McGuire of fixing games, is that source public?
Yeah. Yeah, he let me, well, it's not, it'll be, it's in my book. I'm trying to think of his name.
Is it Butch Lee?
No.
Okay.
Blanton Simmons.
Okay, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Butch Lee was another guy. Al McGuire was playing in the finals, and he blew it getting these technical fouls. And Butch Lee just went nuts, and he said, it's almost like our coach wanted to throw the game.
Yeah. Yeah, well, like I said, Blanton, his claim was that Al was, more than anything, manipulating the totals, like the over and under,
right,
by who he put on the floor or not put on the floor and that sort of thing. But, I mean, you know, the stadium where the, you know, Marquette still plays is named after the guy. You know, I mean, there's, you know, college basketball, there's a lot of, I mean, you go back to the 50s when they had that huge, massive scandal that involved all these, you know, coaches and famous teams, and it kind of destroyed the NIT tournament, in fact. But, I mean, even if you go further, you know, to today, you know, how many coaches, prominent coaches, guys like John Calipari, who twice has destroyed programs, NCAA programs, with all these recruiting violations, and yet just gets another job, like, oh, no big deal. You know, I mean, how much faith do people put in college sports when they see all this corruption? And I think you could investigate any major college program, football or basketball, and find recruiting violations and this, that, and the other thing going on there. But nobody.
Hey, look, there are. Excuse me, I ran a clean program, but I can tell you, not all my competition did. And we were well aware of under-the-table cash payments and things like that because we'd recruit the same kids, and they'd say, well, I like you, coach, and I want to come play for you, but what are you going to give me? And I said, a scholarship, place to stay. And they said, well, no, what about some cash? And that's how you find out about that stuff.
Yeah.
So it was really, I'm telling you, I know you're right on the money with what you're saying with this. And you know, when the Suns had the incident I brought up earlier involving Steve Nash and the corruption of David Stern ruling against the Suns and holding their players out when it was really the Spurs who were the perpetrators, I was done with the NBA at that point. I knew then the fix was in, to borrow from a title. And I knew that for a fact. And then it was the very next spring, there was a draft lottery. And I don't remember the story, but it was a human interest story. And the odds were overwhelmingly defied to give one of the teams, I don't remember if it was Cleveland or who it was, but they got the first pick. And I'm thinking, this whole thing is rigged. This is theater. And I'm wondering, people like me, athletes, coaches, people who look at this, if the average person that I know knew that this was going on, they would never watch these games.
Or at least watch them with a completely different mindset. You know what I mean? It's one thing to, you know, look at a game and be, it's 2 hours or 3 hours of entertainment, you know, like professional wrestling or a movie or whatever, which is fine. But for people who invest, like, you know, money and time and energy and mental anguish because this team won or that team lost, I mean, that's the stuff that, you know, that's the stuff I hope to kind of break with what I do and what I write about, is just to make fans much more informed about what it is they're consuming. You know, if you want to watch, fine. But, you know, at least watch and understand, look, these are businesses. Their business is entertainment. They can legally manipulate these games. They can manipulate draft picks. They can manipulate all this stuff because they own the league. It's theirs. They can do with it as they want. They don't have to follow any of the written rules they have because it's theirs. They can do anything they want. And so if you understand that and watch from that mindset, then it should completely change the way these games are consumed and what people do in regards to them.
See, this is why, you know, I like high school sports. Because you just don't pardon me?
Which aren't clean either, though.
Well, you get the illegal recruiting. I get that.
Yeah.
But you're not having kids get paid, you know, so much money under the table to shave points.
True.
And I have to tell you, that is such a disgusting practice. I mean, it makes me have nothing to do with this now. I mean, listen, when the NCAA playoffs used to come on, before I was aware of any of this, dust it on, get the VCR out. I'm going to watch most of it. I'm going to record all. I was a junkie. I loved it. Now, it's kind of like I might have it on in passing, but I'm doing something else.
Yeah. Yeah, background noise.
Exactly. It's a nightlight.
But I mean, it's amazing because, I mean, this is not just an American thing. It's actually a worldwide phenomenon, too. I mean, the most watched sport is soccer. The most corrupt sport in the world is soccer.
Oh, absolutely.
And they have, you know, literally, like, organized crime syndicates out of, like, the Far East that go around the world trying to fix games. And, like, it's hard to believe, but one of the most corrupt leagues in soccer is actually the Minor League Canadian Soccer League. Which you would think of, who cares, who's betting on it, who's watching it, but it's, they say like literally 50% of the games are fixed. I mean, it's just mind-blowing. I mean, you know, Serie A soccer, which is like the NFL of Italy, it's corrupt from the owners on down to the players. It's corrupt at every level, yet they broadcast it. I think it's on Fox Sports all the time, like it's the greatest thing. But it's incredibly corrupt. It's been proven incredibly corrupt. Yet they broadcast it here and never mention a word of any of that corruption. I mean, you can look at tennis and matches have been corrupted. Rugby matches have been corrupted. The Indian Cricket League is incredibly, same thing, corrupt from top to bottom. I mean, it's all over the world, yet here in the United States, supposedly this never happens. And supposedly I'm a conspiracy theorist because I bring up evidence of it happening.
Well, it's hardly a conspiracy when it's in the FBI files.
Exactly. But that's how I'm treated.
Yeah, so they deal with you by not dealing with you. And I understand why the networks would do that, because if your product is tainted, so are your ratings if you run those events.
Well, and you're invested in it. I mean, you know, people forget, you know, ESPN gives the NFL $2 billion a year to broadcast Monday Night Football. Are you going to shoot yourself in the foot by reporting on, you know, crimes that go on in the NFL and make the make the league look like garbage? No, you're going to quiet that down as much as possible and just be a rah-rah entertainment network, which the E in ESPN stands for is entertainment, but that's what you're going to do because you're invested in it. And Fox Sports gives them billions of dollars, NBC Sports gives them billions of dollars, CBS gives them billions of dollars. Are any of these companies really going to investigate the NFL for malpractices in any way, shape, or form?
No. Of course not. Let me ask you this question. Have you ever come across anything that would indicate that either Charles Barkley or Michael Jordan engaged in illegal betting?
I think Jordan did.
I do, too.
Because I really think his, quote, retirement, the first time he retired, was nonsense. I believe he was being investigated for gambling. In fact, he was known to be gambling with a known cocaine dealer on golf and busted for it. And there were rumors and speculation that he was also gambling on sports at the time. But just as the investigation was heating up, I'm almost positive that the NBA came to him and said, look, you got to go away. We got to make this go away because you mean too much money to too many people. And that's what he did. Then he suddenly retired and said all these things like, I'm happy that my dad saw my last game and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, was it 18 months later, he was back in the league like he never said any of that stuff and continued playing.
I never looked at it that way. That's really interesting. What about Tom Brady of the New England Patriots Super Bowl champion? Could have been MVP, wasn't, but will be. He's generally considered to be the best football player ever. Is he one of those guys?
Well, I had a guy, and I have no idea if this is true, so this is a conspiracy theory, but I'll throw it out there anyway. I had a guy who was a radio host in the Boston area, and he told me that, you know, they had the big Spygate thing where the Patriots were busted for filming the opposing coaches' signals and basically at halftime making their judgments off of knowing what the other team's signals were. Uh-huh. But, I mean, if you look at the New England Patriots, their home record when they play at home is insanely good. They win like 85% of their games at home, which doesn't make any sense in the NFL because it shouldn't be that much of a home field advantage because it's not the noise factor in New England. What is it? You know, what's going on? Well, according to this radio host, he said the Patriots' entire stadium was wired for sound and video, and that from the time players walk off the opposing players walk off the bus through the hallways into the locker room and back until they go back on the bus to leave the stadium, they're monitored. So they know everything that's said, everything that's talked about, everything that goes on, and that's why the Patriots never lose at home.
Well, wasn't that called Video Gate? Didn't that come to light?
Spygate, but it didn't go to that depth. This guy claimed that the entire stadium, entire Gillette Stadium, to this day, is wired for sound and video, so they know what's going on, which is why they never lose at home.
Gillette.
I don't know if it's true, but no one can explain their home record. Nobody can, because it's nonsensical how many games they win at home.
How about the dynasties with John Wooden in college basketball? What was it, 11 titles in 12 years, something like that, some obscene number.
But yeah, but I mean, wasn't that, again, that was UCLA, right?
Yes.
And they were known to be, they were known back then to give cars to the best athletes to make sure they came there to play. I mean, it's like everywhere you want to look, if you really want to look, you can find some weird stuff going on with a team or a franchise or, like, say, even colleges. I mean, it's, unfortunately, it's everywhere. I mean, I played in a recreational softball league, and we had two teams get busted for using illegal bats. because they wanted to win so bad. I mean, people cheat to win. It's unfortunate, but it's true. You couldn't even play just a friendly softball game without other teams cheating here in Wisconsin. You know, so, yeah, when there's more money involved, more pride on the line, more of everything, the corruption's sure to follow. It's an unfortunate aspect of life.
Tell my listening audience, how did you come to be interested in this, and whatever possessed you to write a book?
Well, I was, I grew up a sports fan. You know, my dad was a sports fan, and so I always watched and followed sports. And it was just, as I got older, I was still interested in sports, and I was interested in being a writer. And basically, there's two books I read. There was the book I mentioned earlier, Interference, by Dan Moldea. And then there was another book called They Call It a Game, written by Bernie Parrish, who was a former NFL player for the Cleveland Browns. And Moldea approached the corruption of the NFL through this gambling and organized crime end. And Parrish, as a former player, approached from that end. And in Parrish's book, which came out, I want to say in the 70s, he basically said that when CBS and these other networks invested into the NFL, in his words, they literally bought the league and controlled it as a television show. And so I just started putting those things together. And the more I read and the more I researched, the more I realized I don't think these guys are making anything up. And in fact, I don't think they necessarily went far enough. And probably just because they didn't have all the information. You know, the internet gives you more access to more things, more books, more research. And I just started writing about it.
That's amazing. What is your professional background?
You mean what do I do for a living?
Yes.
I actually, believe it or not, I work at a music store, of all things.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So this was kind of an avocation for you, not so much a pursuit of journalism.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I wanted to be a writer. I went to school for writing, and I worked on working on screenplays, trying to do movie scripts and that sort of thing. And actually, my wife suggested I write a book. And so the book I kind of wanted to write was, in my own head, was like a sports conspiracy book about all these potential sports conspiracies, like Jordan. You know, did he really retire? Was he forced out of the NBA for gambling?
Sure.
And the more I kind of worked on the book and thought about it, the more I realized really there's just one overarching aspect to all of this, and it's manipulation of sports through the media. And so I just kind of put it all together, and then the more I thought about it and researched it, I realized, you know, because the leagues can fix the outcome of their own games, well, then they can control everything that occurs within these sports. Their best business decision would be to do this. So all of these other little conspiracies all really spring from this idea. And this idea isn't made up. It's true. I mean, I have lawyers that follow me on Twitter. I've, you know, spoken actually at a sports law conference at Florida State a few years ago. Nobody's come up to me and said, you know, you're crazy for saying this, because I can point to this law and this law that says this is illegal. Nobody can point to any law that tells me I'm wrong.